Hey everyone, welcome to Wire Talks, the Wire podcast where we discuss all things crypto. So whether you're a veteran or a crypto noob, we're all here learning together. This is your host, Thomas Scaria. I work here at Wire. Today we have an extra special podcast episode, firstly because I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Louis, head of research and fund manager at Wirecap.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Louis. But more importantly, I am joined by John Piotrowski, founder and CEO of The Ocean. John, welcome.
Thank you. Anytime I get introduced as extra special, that's a good day for me.
And you flew out pretty far to join us here. Where are you coming out from, John?
So I live in New York. I've been in New York for 5 years. And you know what some of the work that we're doing now is based in that general area. But I've been here all week. Talking to people, investors, did a few conferences and presentations and wanted to make sure I made a stop here.
Yeah, just before I dive into things, like how's the New York scene different from the SF crypto scene?
It's interesting, right? Like New York, anything involving money, New York tends to think it rules the roost. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an excitement in that city in this space in particular, because maybe this is one time in the general tech space we're playing on even playing field. At least that's the feeling of people in New York. So there's a certain buzz and excitement about this technology and innovation that I haven't seen in others as much as a result.
Mm-hmm. And is your team, are they based there? Are they distributed?
We're a distributed team. So most of our team is actually in Krakow, Poland. Sort of a modern team and modern philosophy, truly global. You know, our good friends and that we met in Krakow a few months ago, maybe actually closer to a year ago. So we were building our technology stack and, hey, can only do so much work in any single day. Mm-hmm. Met the rest of our team and, you know, now work, we're 23 total people, spread around the U.S. and in Krakow and excited about, you know, growing that in the near term.
And just not to get sidetracked too early, but what's it like kind of building a distributed team? How do you go about acquiring talent?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I used to manage, you know, this kind of highlights, we get into my own background a little bit. You know, I used to manage a big distributed team at Goldman in prior life. And the thing I learned is if you're in that situation and you're trying to manage as best as you can, the steer the ship, you need to spend a lot more time on the phone and in person than you think you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go to Poland now quite frequently, and we want to slowly start to co-locate and bring people more and more together. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it's just on the phone every day, talking through things, getting to know people from slightly different cultures and perspectives, and it keeps it interesting than just screaming at people on a New York trading floor.
Yeah. And now's a good time as ever to talk a little bit about your background. Sure. And how you got into crypto right up till the point of founding The Ocean.
Yeah. So my background is in general banking capital markets. So when I graduated undergrad, I was at the IMF for 2 years, McKinsey for 2 years, based in Europe. I did political campaigns for a gap year, which is a very interesting experience. And then when I came off the political stuff, went to Goldman, originally started, trading some stuff and doing some risk management strategy stuff for the firm. And so by the time I left late last year, or actually beginning of this year, after 5 years at one place, you know, and, you know, that place is changing like much of the finance industry, I'd rather be part of the change and be a change agent and get into this space a little bit. And I started, trading crypto probably 2.5 years ago, but really thinking about it from the perspective of financial institutions, the technology around the same time as part of my mandate is at the firm. So I come at it from a very much a, you know, financial services use case perspective. And that's part of the reason that we're making certain design decisions that we're making at The Ocean is, you know, our view is if you want to build the maximally valuable and transformative company in this space, you're going to have to interface with the traditional financial world in some way, shape, or form. So yeah. we want to be someone that sets us up from day one to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And did you find kind of at the back end of your time at Goldman, did that feel like an industry or a type of business that was structurally challenged, or what was the kind of vibe in there when?
Well, I think it's, so I remember interviewing for jobs like the day before, the day of, and day after Lehman Brothers collapsed, which is a very interesting time. And, you know, I was looking at, like, The Economist had a headline, I think it was last week, of, you know, 10 years after Lehman, what's changed? And I think the answer, besides more regulatory oversight and more insurance that banks effectively have to buy, from a structural perspective, I would argue not a lot has changed. You know, the industry is more regulated, but you haven't fixed fundamental technical challenges that led to that event and continue to lead to lots of regulations, one way to control it. And so, you know, there's I think what was interesting to me always, like, working the 10 years is I think a lot of banks, bank customers, regulators know that something is amiss and not quite working and not quite right. And so when I left Goldman, you know, the last year or two I was there, I was focused on how do we rethink, restructure, what businesses grow and shrink in this new world order. There's no answer yet, right? And I think a lot of institutions, a lot of people in general are struggling with what's the role of financial services in general. And I think that idea of the service piece of that description is something that maybe in the past wasn't the focus, you know? And so I think, you know, the how do you think of financial services less of an end all be all, but more of a growth engine in general is something that I think a lot of people are struggling with. And it's something that gets me excited about blockchain and crypto.
Mm-hmm. And so you firmly went down that crypto rabbit hole when you were at Goldman.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I was at Citi. And, you know, once I was deep in that rabbit hole, it was very easy to just look around and be like, okay, this place is very not tech forward. You know, there's lots of busy work going around, things that could be automated. Tons of everyone here is basically a middleman.
Definitely. Like, yeah. When you start thinking about what am I doing as a cog in the machine,
right?
Very depressed.
although, you know, it's going to take a very long time for banks to get down on their knees like that. But I just couldn't be part of a place that was, not a growth sector anymore.
Yeah. And I think, you know, banks have a hard problem in the sense of, you know, at the end of the day, they are the central cogs in the machine and holding customer assets and so on. You want that to be kind of regulated and risk averse. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you get Lehman Brothers. So there is some need for it to be slow. But I think there's, you know, with not slow, but let's call it, you know, lots of due diligence and thinking and move carefully in new technologies. But I think the issue sometimes is obviously they're run by human beings. The incentive of people in general is how to make sure I get mine as part of the process, you know? And so I think as a result, there's also a structural incentive in the businesses themselves and not necessarily be forward thinking or
indeed
adaptive.
On that note, I'm not sure if it's something that you've thought about much, although I think it'll probably be an emerging theme in this industry is basically algorithmic capital markets, be it credit or equity. I don't know that there's certain people in the traditional venture capital space that are now thinking along those lines. Is that something that you've thought about? And is that something that you have your kind of own view on how that might develop in the crypto space?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a little bit of why we're building a DEX and how we think about it is this exact point of, and I remember being at Goldman and part of my job was to think about which clients to fire because they were prohibitively expensive. And the pushback, you know, because they're moving lots of assets and going through Goldman pipes and regulators want you to put in certain protections. And then the client pushback would always be, why is it still so expensive to move a digital bit that represents value from point A to point B? And then you would quickly shut the door and leave the room or hang up the phone, fake an illness or whatever it would take, because there's not a good answer to that question. It's just 40 years of financial technology. So something that makes me excited about this space and why I left Goldman to build what we're building is exactly this point of a lot of the financial services just moving things around. And there's a sort of, there's a capital raise component, there's a movement component, and then a distribution of value component. And like, we want to tackle that piece of movement, because I think you can think about genesis of Bitcoin and why we're all in the space in general. It really comes down to a lot of that problem. I'm just trying to move a piece of value from here to there and make sure it doesn't blow up in the process. And I get as much of it as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And we're going to dive into your project in specific that you founded after your experience at Goldman, but I'll just kind of wind you up for that. So John, you're running a 0x relayer. And for our audience that doesn't really know what that means, we actually had the 0x guys come through last week. So I'll just give a high level overview if you missed that episode as well. But the 0x protocol is just a protocol for a decentralized exchange. They hope to define some of the settlement logic and order broadcasting logic, but leave the rest of it open-ended and enable this ecosystem of relayers to recognize those same orders from what they call makers, which are basically people that stand on either side of the market, just market makers, right? And display them on their own order book for takers, so people that are taking that same liquidity to fill it. So relayer is very different from exchanges, whereas exchanges really encompass that infrastructure layer that 0x is built out, and also handle execution of trades and handle user funds as well. Relayers merely facilitate the signaling between market participants by hosting an order book, right? Would you add anything to the definition of 0x relayer there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I think is brilliant about 0x and the power of a blockchain is something that's sort of puzzling a little bit if you think about centralized exchanges, is I have this technology, this thing that says, hey, every transaction I can settle on a chain, and you know, I have rules that let me remove the ability or the need for someone to sit in between of passing the baton from one party to the other at the same time, the role banks play. And then every crypto exchange goes and does exactly that same infrastructure in the old way that everybody agreed was messed up, right? And so I think, you know, the concept of how do you remove as much of that need of the middleman that's holding things, you know, that this kind of game of nobody wants to give up except at the same time, how do you enforce that cryptographically as opposed to another entity is really powerful. And then it becomes a question of how do you do what you're talking about, is matching people in that world. And something that we're in, I think if you look at the different projects building on 0x, their market focus is different. You know, we have a certain customer and thesis that we're pursuing, and I think Radar and Paradex have their own. And you know, I think something we're super focused on specifically for us is how do we replicate as much of the experience that people, whether it's individual traders or institutions or whomever, get from the old trading experience, so that the adoption is not fundamentally different. And then given a space that's still so early, how do we be as interoperable as humanly possible? And I think I think a lot of people, you know, think of DEXs and this concept of no custody. They think of it in no custody terms, which means kind of gives a connotation of chaos and who knows what's going on. But I view it as interoperable, where, you know, I think if you build it the right way, and I argue that we have, I can just plug into any wallet or custody solution. I can list any asset. I can work with any customer, and I can start doing things a little bit more creatively and with less friction and cost and risk than some other centralized methods.
So I just want to touch on something that you mentioned there. How do you think your target customer profile differs from other 0x relayers?
So we're all creatures of our background. I'm a finance person. Maybe that's a good thing or bad thing, but that's who I am. And I think my own perspective on the concept of, you know, an interoperable separate execution from custody, be maximally flexible in matching people to trade things of value, is really most powerful a concept to the old financial world. Not necessarily, it is transformative to this new financial world of just crypto assets, but the question is, can you also do something to build it that it touches and interfaces well and helps solve some of those old problems? Mm-hmm. And so I think we think a lot about, you know, lots of people talk about the crypto market today is just being largely retail focused, mm-hmm. you know, individual traders and funds that have popped up. I think about, and we think about, we want to serve part of that customer base too, but can we also do it in such a way that I can get a Goldman to plug into yeah. it? I can get traditional products in that same infrastructure, because it's that idea of not repeating Lehman Brothers 2.0 is pretty attractive to the entities like Lehman and regulators, as much if not more attractive to retail traders. Because I'm, yeah. I'm kind of the philosophy too that I think some DEX projects go to market and say, hey, we're a DEX, we don't take custody, we're safer, use us, individual trader. I'm of the view and belief that if you're the average individual trader, I view the fact that I manage my own private keys or that's this platform is decentralized as like the last priority, not the first, right? The things that I want, if I'm trading anything as an individual, tend to be, is it cool new stuff that I want to buy? Is there liquidity, easy onboarding, so on and so forth? And the fact that it's decentralized is in that I have to check all the boxes on those other things, and then I worry about making that decision. Mm. And I think that's part of the reason you haven't seen DEXs take off, you know? And I think we kind of flip it on its head and say that DEX concept most valuable to the old world. We want to get and prove ourselves in this new world, but we have to do lots of things besides just being a DEX to win customers and have a good experience for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when do you think we might see, I mean, obviously in traditional asset markets, the vast majority of volume is executed by institutions. Mm-hmm. When that's probably not the case in crypto today, right. When do you expect to see the flippening in the volume share?
I think it's partly a function of infrastructure, regulation, and products. And what I mean by that is, you know, lots of people talk about, you know, custody is a big issue for institutions who are executing on behalf of people that are not themselves, right? Yeah. And so you need that third-party protection. And if you look at a lot of the announcements from, you know, Nomura, Citi, Morgan Stanley, my former institution, the thing that they're focused on seemingly right now, and you know, certainly I'm talking to a lot of these folks, is custody, right? So that hasn't been built yet, but it's in the works. So that's sort of step one. Building that's going to take a little time. The second is, if I'm a big financial institution, there's no way I'm touching Binance. Not to pick on Binance, but just the example everybody knows, right? I can't do business with an unregulated platform that no one knows where it's located or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a piece of it. And the third piece, which I think is a little more nuanced, is, you know, crypto assets have captured lots of people's imagination, but from the institutional perspective, I'm managing money on behalf of pension funds, insurance companies, working with big family offices, and then they'll come to the institution and say, I've heard about this thing called Bitcoin. How do I price it, hedge it, risk management? How do I build a portfolio around it? What's the value of it? What do I spend it on if shit hits the fan? And the answer, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows the answer to those questions, right? So yeah. I think a lot of the focus personally needs to be less on how do I construct a Bitcoin ETF, because that doesn't resolve any of those problems. It's how do I make sure that we're building tools, applications, technology solutions that I would argue we're building, that you guys are building to make this stuff more accessible to the average person to do something with. And I think that's really the piece in the institutional game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess kind of related to that point, do you think that that there is any pent-up demand pending certain infrastructure being built, or do you think the infrastructure is going to be built and then you know, a lot of the companies building custody solutions and things like that are going to realize that actually the demand isn't really there yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the calculus, and I know this well because I used to think about this stuff at Goldman. I think part of the calculus is, and I want to be, crypto means lots of things to lots of different people, right? I think a lot of the institutional focus is on blockchain as a technology. Can we apply it to old assets? I know the first thing I need to do to experiment is build a solution to store it. So I build this custody thing. And then it gets to your point of, okay, now I've built a way to store it. Now what asset do I put in this bucket or this locker? There's going to be some customers and clients that want Bitcoin or other tokens because they view them. I've talked to a lot of family offices that view it through the prism of stocks. You know, maybe there's a Yahoo or Amazon circa 1993. So let's do it. You know, let's see what happens. And but then I think there's a big push on, you know, some of the projects we're working with closely, Harbor Trust Token, you know, this idea of, can I put traditional assets in a cryptographic wrapper or token form is really interesting. You know, I think, you know, that's a different business. It's a different use case for the technology than Bitcoin, at least. I think institutions in general, that space in general, want to be able to do both, just like I want to be able to do both. But really the emphasis and the demand, 95% of the demand in general is on that old stuff and new format, is the way I always say it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the new stuff that has yet to prove itself, in their view.
And so overall, you would say that the thematic or the narrative that will probably get more traction with institutional investors will be this kind of tokenizing traditional assets.
That's my view. And I think if you do that and you say, we've tokenized this traditional asset. So I think of it in steps, right? Like, it's hard to get human beings in general. It's hard to get me to adopt anything if it's completely foreign to what I know. So think of Bitcoin as like the most extreme different thing you could conceive of. You know, something like a tokenized asset is somewhere in the middle, right? It's going to be easier to get them to adopt that than Bitcoin. And I think of that in the same prism of, you know, just other, you know, going back to our business, you know, DEXs, where people, you know, we build an off-chain order book, looks, tastes, feels like traditional exchange order book. You have other projects that are making more peer-to-peer or marketplace kind of chat room-ish type of platforms, which I think makes sense for the individual person, but then they go pitch an institution and the institution says, where's the order book? I want an order book. I know how to play with an order book. All my systems are set up for order book. And then they're surprised when the institutions don't adopt, right? Like, so I think we need to be a little bit, maybe we get to a world in 20 or 25 years where that's the model is like this kind of pure peer-to-peer chat room, because there are certainly problems with order book systems. But I don't think you're going to get there by building that dream world today. You need to kind of step into it. You know, I think that's the way we think about it, is that right cadence and rhythm to that development cycle.
Yeah.
And you were touching on this earlier, John, about KYC and AML and why that's important for you. And I think one of the distinguishing factors from the ocean versus other relayers is that you, I think I noticed you used OnFido to do your KYC verification, and you have a verification process at all.
That's true.
Which is pretty rare for even a 0x relayer. What's been the pushback from your users when you've, you know, you probably released that product or released that product with that verification?
Yep.
But, you know, with like the news coming out about Shapeshift and how that was just like a whole shit show on Twitter.
I would say it's been interesting. There's been less pushback than I would have thought, to be honest. And I think it's, you know, partly a function of, you know, Shapeshift and kind of where the tea leaves are growing in the state of the marketplace. And so I think in general, you know, all of us through end of last year, beginning this year, when just chaos and people, you know, everybody getting into the space, and that's certainly cooled off since then, people become more sober. As a result, I think people are thinking like, what's the long-term value? How do we bring order to chaos? Maybe this dance with regulators of finding the right balance between innovation, regulation isn't such a bad thing after all, especially if it gives me access to things that maybe I wouldn't have access before. Right. And so I think just like the Swiss bank accounts today, there's always going to be a demand for anonymous trading or unregulated marketplaces, and some products kind of lend themselves to that. We've always been in the view, A, regulation, financial services in general always goes one direction, and it's very rarely, you know, more liberal or more free. And then, you know, if you want to solve a lot of the DEX problems around liquidity, users, interesting things to buy and sell that, that people agree on the value of, you're going to need regulation to do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that, that customer identification piece is the first step on what you have to do that.
Do you think there's a trend towards companies in the space being more pragmatic with respect to those kind of issues?
Pragmatic in what sense?
As in a greater willingness to comply.
Oh, yeah. I think so. I think people, you know, think of New York Attorney General's report. I think it was last week.
Yeah.
You know, and then we met with regulators immediately on the heels of that. And, you know, imagine being a named in that report, whether it's a true or untrue statement of what regulators said or you self-report or whatever it is. Now imagine you're in their name is in that report and you're trying to pitch Goldman Sachs on you're the right bridge company to work with, or someone who else is, isn't in the space is the right person to work with. That gives you a tremendous disadvantage. And now you need to play catch up, right? And so I think people are starting to get that maybe, particularly from an adoption perspective of the space, it's really important to start thinking and finding the right balance. And the right way to do that, as somebody who's worked with regulators for a long time, is not to necessarily do the Kraken approach. Though I can certainly see the frustration at times. I think it's work with regulators, work with policymakers, figure out the right balance. Am I somebody who wants to adopt every financial service regulation? No. There's certain things I don't agree with. And there's certain things I think specific to DEXs you can do without. Do I think it's a net good thing to know who's trading things of value on platform? Yeah. So then somewhere in between, we got to find the right balance.
Mm-hmm. I think globally, regulations are less of a focus than at least in the US. It's almost like the tail wagging the dog, if you will, for US-based DEXs. Regulations is definitely center plate. But if you ask, you know, CZ from Binance, he would argue that why even focus on US users? There's a bigger market internationally. Yep. You can, of course, move your exchange or, you know, where it's domiciled to Malta or whatever liberal nation will have you, that is going to foster in your growth and be supportive to your mission, right? So why do you focus on the US user base and a regulatory environment here rather than pulling in Binance?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a couple different reasons. First thing I'd say is we're not U.S. focused, right? We may be under U.S. jurisdiction the way we've structured the company, but we want to be a truly global player. Most of our customers, you know, we have 3,000, we've been alive for a month, we have 3,000 confirmed folks on the platform. Most of those folks are in Asia, which makes sense given that it's Asia. So we, number one is we want to think of ourselves as fully global and certainly support that. You know, the second is for the types of customers we want to serve, the type of business we want to get into, that kind of bridge concept between these two worlds, you're going to need to be regulated in some way, shape, or form, right? Like if you want to list a securities token, if I want to do you know, a derivatives build, which we're doing, you know, in a way that's going to be exciting, safe for retail customers, but then also have a way to bridge and grow into that institutional world, we'll have to do it a certain way under certain rules. And I think that, you know, countries are different in how they treat financial services regulations. Some are more liberal than others. You know, U.S. tends to be a little more conservative, but not in every case. Korea's tight capital controls. China has its own framework. You know, all these places. But you're going to have to do something, right? And putting the bastion in the ground of like, we're trying to do the right thing. We're a U.S.-based company. We're doing the right thing under U.S. law. All of a sudden, once we get to a certain scale in other countries or want to do business in other countries, they're like, okay, these guys are trying to do the right thing. So let's find the right balance to do it. And then the third piece, I think, if you know, I mean, obviously, I'm a little biased because I come from that New York-based finance world. So, like all people in New York, I think the world revolves around New York. I do think there is a certain, if you want to be against kind of bridge new financial world order company, you're going to have to interface with a lot of the old financial world order, which is based in New York, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but a lot of players. And so I think for those three reasons, we think, you know, this early regulatory adoption gives a lot of benefits. And then also to individual, you know, retail traders on DEXs, right? Like what you all are doing for fiat to crypto. I can only do that if we identify who's what, right? Liquidity. Reason we have professional market makers on the platform, our platform, and most DEXs do not, is because we identify customers, because they have their own compliance regime. They can't trade with anybody else that isn't identified. So, you know, we'll have a bunch of new and interesting products that came to us to be listed on our platform because we're regulated. And they want the stamp, implicit stamp of approval that helps them stand out in an environment that's a little crazy at times. And so I think there's trade-offs, but there are a lot of benefits too to all this stuff.
And is the ocean regulated?
So we're registered with FinCEN.
As an MSP?
As a money transmitter. And okay. Even though we're, you know, I don't want to reveal all of our legal machinations. We don't think that description is quite accurate. And we're working with FinCEN to figure out the right framework for it.
Yep.
You know, we're also working with New York Department of Financial Services, the SEC, the CFTC. We'll have a number of high profile and exciting announcements in the coming weeks on that front. You know, and I think in general, my philosophy, and what I learned at Goldman, having worked with a lot of these regulators for years, was I can have that head in the sand approach, you know, move offshore, or I can get in there and control the conversation and work actively to come a net better outcome for the industry and for users. I think that latter is much better long-term strategy.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much you're going to want to get into the details on this, but, you know, for instance, you know, working with the SEC and perhaps becoming licensed under one of their various regimes, does that restrict what you can do as well as open up what you can do?
It restricts what types of activities we can or cannot facilitate in terms of, as an example, you might see a lot of activity on certain DEXs that you would say looks a lot like somebody trading back and forth to pump volume numbers, right? I'm not going to be able to do that. You know, I think, but in general, if you structure, and the way we're structuring businesses in a little bit of a traditional financial services perspective where we have unregulated activity in one bucket, securities in one bucket, derivatives with their own controls and protections around them, I think there's a little bit of a misnomer in the space that says, hey, nobody knows what the right rule is for certain products or what bucket to put certain products in. So therefore, I'm not going to adopt anything. But you know things are going to be put in one of three buckets. So why don't you set up the framework to do any of the three buckets? Then I can do whatever I want with whoever I want. And again, I think that's, you know, if you're trying to build a successful transformative company, why wouldn't you do something like that? It's painful. Like you need a little part of the reason, you know, to be honest, we're getting good regulatory traction is my own experience, right? Like I have good relationships with regulators. I've done the dance before and I know what their concerns are.
Yep.
And a DEX actually is a really attractive, is most, I would argue, most exciting to regulators of all people because it solves this Lehman problem. So why not use that to your advantage? Like
That's interesting, the way you describe that sort of covering all bases, so to speak. I can actually only really think of one other company in the entire space that's really taking that approach, and they're not a major player.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting kind of point of differentiation for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, part of the game here is standing out.
Yeah.
Crypto's loud. You know, but I think there's a lot of benefits. And you know, if there's any company that's going to have a good shot at kind of bridging these two worlds and growing from 200 billion market cap to trillions that everybody's excited about, obviously I'm a little bit biased, but I would be a betting man on the ocean at least as one of those companies because of all these these angles that we're playing a little bit.
So on that point of standing out, how do you think, say, if we just look at it, the perspective of DEXs or even 0x relays, what are the points of differentiation that they're going to be able to compete on long term?
I mean, I think, you know, and I kind of echo Will Warren here a little bit, who, you know, the 0x philosophy is I have lots of little specific, I don't want to speak fully for him, but when I hear that team speak, it tends to be a vision of different players specializing in different pieces of the market. Maybe it's retail people who want to gamble in the U.S. versus, you know, Latin America, and you know, an ancillary benefit to Coinbase. It's the Paradex model, or like lots of different models, and then having some interactivity around them. I would say the space is still so immature that it's hard to say what each player's strategy exactly is in that game. I think a lot of it is, you know, people, as an example, like I talked to Alan at Radar Relay maybe a couple of weeks ago, who I really like, and I think their team is doing great, interesting stuff. Like, they made certain design decisions to make it, I think, a little more kind of retail focus. We've made certain design decisions to support, I think, not just retail, but certain types of customers. And games still early, we'll have to see it evolve. I think you have to in this space. I think lots of people are just trying to capture Binance magic in a bottle.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get that special sauce to go up to $1 billion in volume? But at some point, then everybody looks exactly the same. So I do like that. Even though it's still early 0x relays, you can kind of see where people are going.
Yeah.
But I think there is still a sense of grabbing a little bit for who are the, you know, what's the right model that'll make us stand out.
And if you get kind of institutional market makers and more institutional players early, do you see the ocean as becoming a kind of wholesale provider of liquidity to other relayers?
I do.
Yeah.
You know, as an example, you know, we have an interesting initiative where we're out the next couple of weeks around, you know, a certain use case for DEXs that I think is really interesting, particularly for an algorithmic market maker. The fact that you're not taking custody lets you do certain things faster and better. You know, I think that's something that, again, it'll be a good differentiating factor, an interesting example of a DEX-specific use case, not just another way to trade things.
Yeah.
And so I think we're super focused on being creative in how we leverage, you know, our infrastructure, the things DEXs can do. And as a result, then, you know, if you build, like, our business model is the more stuff that flows through our pipes, the better we'll be. So I want to flow through as much of the pipes. If I built good pipes, I can handle it from day one, and I think we have.
Yeah. And I guess a related issue to that, I think, Thomas, you wanted to touch on this, which is, you know, obviously 0x was built with this vision of sharing liquidity. Mm. What's your view on the protocol in its current state, its ability to enable that? You know, if it's not the role of the protocol, how should that be organized? And what's your kind of view on doing that specifically with the ocean?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the protocol is fantastic, right? It envisions this world of really doing the thing that blockchains were sort of designed to do, is how do I do this swap without a middleman? It does leave the specific implementation and the actual business model up to the individual people implementing it, the teams doing it. So I think the idea of sharing liquidity presupposes that there's liquidity to share, number one. You know, and so first you got to get that liquidity. And I think that sort of regulated concept is one of the big pieces that people have missed. And then the second is, you know, I think depending on what regulatory framework you want to go down, there's going to be certain things that I can share with certain players and certain things I won't be able to, right? And I think that's something that, you know, we'll have to see how folks, the speed and the cadence and what the priority is. But as an example, you know, when we become, you know, securities law licensed, you know, we'll have to restrict that market to whatever conditions are appropriate and players. So, you know, I kind of view regulation as well. Another way to look at it is I want to sell many different types of assets to as many different types of people. And so people want tokenized gold, tokenized real estate, tokenized share in their dog. I don't think it's a wise one, the last one, but I'm a little bit of a lazy, a free markets person. So I want to build the optimal marketplace, one-stop shop type of idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you think that, that there should be any kind of protocol level system for sharing liquidity, like to share the economics of trading activity or something to do perhaps with the token?
I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit a person who is, I want to use the right tool for the job so long as it's the right tool, right? And so a lot of people ask us, you're making a bet on Ethereum, right? And I say yes and no. We are in the short term in the sense of everybody's building on Ethereum. So if you want anything to trade, mm-hmm. it's going to have to be Ethereum based. And you see most of the tokenized asset projects, doing that, building on that ERC-20 spec. Suppose tokenized assets really takes off and Ethereum never scales. Maybe we have to jump to another chain. Or maybe we need to, based on the needs of our customers, create XYZ little thing in 0x or our settlement layer to do something. Mm. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Like I'm not, we want to work and we talk a lot with 0x team on what are certain things that maybe we want to build or issues running into. And maybe we'll solve them together. Maybe we won't. I think really my view is if somebody wants to build a great transformative company, the vision has to be, what does the customer want? First, who is your customer? What does the customer want?
Yeah.
So I think because there will be different customers, using 0x in the city state and there will be different needs, we'll have to see how that plays out.
Right. And do you think, for instance, a decision to perhaps integrate EOS, would that be a customer-led decision?
I think a customer and industry-led decision. Like the great thing and the hard thing about running a trading platform is you're only as good as the things you list, which means it's nice you're scalable. I can list lots of different things. I don't have to worry about building things in that sense. But I also can't jump to EOS if there's nothing worthwhile of trading. Right. And so there's a little bit of you have to find the right balance and work with projects early. And it's part of the reason we spend a lot of time with, talking to new projects. What are the things we want to list, especially in the tokenized asset game? Obviously that world is the world I come from. We want to work closely with those folks because it's in our best interest to make sure that we're a good place to find interesting projects.
What are some other pushbacks on the 0x relayer standard? Some pain points, particularly for the ocean, and some general pain points for the relayer ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one pain point in DEXs and daily active users for any DApp is just how the hell do I use this thing with MetaMask or Ledger? This little thing that I click, like it's not the most intuitive user experience ever. And if you look at I keep always coming back to this point of, you look at daily active users today of any DApp, it's exchanges all at the top and then it drops real quick after the fact. And I think a large part of the problem is just the usability isn't there. So I think the number one issue is, and we've talked a lot about this, maybe we'll need to engineer the right wallet solution for folks to use in general to interface with things. We've talked a lot about that. That's one. The second piece is, this concept of, specific to 0x and something we're thinking a lot about. And 0x v2 gets you part of the way there, but not all the way there. This concept of wrapping Ether. Everybody knows that this is a big pain point, just getting people to think through that. It's difficult. So as an example, one small example, on our platform today, we updated, WETH to just ETH. It's the same thing, mm-hmm. right? You still will need to do the wrapping. This will need to facilitate for you. But we had a lot of feedback from customers. What the hell is WETH? I don't know this thing. And you explain it to them. Okay, I get it. So why don't you just call it ETH? Mm-hmm. So again, let the customer decide. And so I think something This is my first startup, but I did run political campaigns before. Political campaigns are very similar. The thing you learn in political campaigns is listen to the voters, listen to the customers. I do think, and again, this kind of goes back to the idea of DEXs selling themselves on decentralized or, you know, holding your own private keys. Seemingly no one wants to do that yet. So you got to find out a right solution to do that, a right customer base that's willing to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, the DEX that's, I mean, if you want to call it a DEX, mm-hmm. I think it's fair enough to call it a DEX that's received the most traction to date is IDEX.
Yep.
And it's arguably a less pure solution from a decentralization standpoint. Do you think that that proves your point, or do you think there's another reason why they've had more traction to date?
I mean, I think it's partly to that point of, you know, IDEX is sort of nice. It really looks, feels, tastes like a traditional exchange. I deposit, quote unquote, but I do it in a smart contract, and then I don't have to worry about some of these other abstractions. You know, part of their business model seems to be as well listing as many types of assets as quickly as possible, which is a business model that's obviously proven successful. It's not going to be our business model. You know, and so I think that issue of, you know, and a lot of people ask about the regulatory bit. You're going to give up some things maybe in the short term to get some things in the long term. That's a little bit our philosophy. IDEX is an interesting business for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of on the business side of things, how do you think about your revenue model or the revenue models of relays in general? What's going to be sustainable in the long term? I mean, arguably, it's a space ripe for commoditization in the purest sense of the world.
Yeah.
Like, is anybody going to be able to run a sustainable business on this kind of technology? Because it almost seems antithetical.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think part of that is why we think of ourselves a little less in we are a 0x relayer, but more that we are a financial services company looking to de-risk and improve the efficiency of the overall systems. What does that mean? You know, so we're working on, you know, certain specs for wallets, certain specs for margin and derivative solutions in a non-custodial fashion. How do we do cross-chain? You know, I think our philosophy is not let's use 0x, let's wait for people to build things that we can list, and let's wait for, you know, daily active users to come. We're going to make our own luck, you know? And so I think our mandate, at least the way I think of our mandate, is, you know, de-risk, improve financial flow, period, starting in crypto assets, moving to that tokenized asset world. It's going to take a lot more than just building a 0x relayer.
Yeah.
And so we want to do that stuff.
And so it sounds like you're thinking of bringing your own derivative products to market?
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think at least building a platform that's compliant, that sets the stage for maybe we build our own products, maybe we partner with an institution that's interested in building and issuing those products. They have, to be honest, tremendous amount of advantages in that game. And at some point, I really just want to be someone who's constantly iterating on the venue of how do we connect to more, interoperable with more.
Yeah.
But I am very conscious that we're going to have to make our own luck.
Yeah.
And be pretty aggressive and creative on moving the space forward. And I think there's a big, you know, that's a philosophical difference between us and a lot of projects in the space. And a lot of it goes back to that regulatory piece too, where a lot of the things that people want to do or talk about wanting to do is going to need regulatory coverage, right? That's something that, you know, the ocean, you know, lots of fish, lots of products, lots of liquidity. Mm-hmm. Come on home, jump in, water's warm, you know, that type of thing. Where I think we'll be a good partner for lots of projects that want to tackle hard fintech, let's call it, problems, but maybe don't have the expertise in legal compliance working with those types of players that we do. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's an advantage we have.
And going back to the business model, do you collect fees currently in ZRX?
We allow users, you know, again, kind of listening to customers, what they want. You can either pay fees in 0x or native. Mm-hmm. You know, right now our fee model is 5 basis points for takers, 2.5 for makers.
Okay.
And then the Ocean token, which is a tool for just to reward early adopters. You hold it, you get discounts on that fee model. And as we expand and offer some of these other services, like maybe our margin lending or, you know, some of our other business lines, let's call it, we might have a different fee model as a result. So I don't actually see, to be honest, that kind of spot market as our core bread and butter revenue model. It's going to be these other things we build around to support the ecosystem that I think will be interesting.
Do you think maker taker fees in the DEX space go to zero?
Good question.
I think I would put it, I wouldn't say it's necessarily just a DEX issue. I think it's a, you know, exchange financial flow issue, period. Mm. Like there's a lot of pushback on maker rebate model in the traditional financial world. Of, does that create pernicious incentives? And to your point, it should be in the steady state in some sense of, you know, if things are maximally efficient and interoperable, yes, it should be over time eaten down to zero or near zero. And I think it is going to be important on what's the other value you bring to the table.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a question or a debate I had with, a few VCs not too long ago of what makes more sense to invest in custody or exchange. And I'm of the view, you know, custody solutions, at least from an institutional perspective, you know, you see a lot of investment and excitement in that now. In steady state, though, you'll do everything that Goldman and Nomura are talking about, which is bring the custody in-house. Why am I going to pay Coinbase custody when I can build something that's infinitely scalable one time?
It's not a cheap service either.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I think that's, and that kind of goes back to what's an advantage of a DEX. Well, if everybody's going to build their own custody solution, you need a place to plug into.
Yeah.
I can't have custody coupled with execution.
In the end,
again, the ocean.
Yeah. In the end, you'll own the user experience. You'll be able to deliver the products to your distribution.
That's right. And so, it all becomes about products and distribution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you wanted to build out a little bit more middleware, if you will,
sure,
between 0x and yourself, or maybe some abstractions on top of your app to introduce some new products. Do you imagine a world where that becomes more and more relevant and 0x becomes less and less relevant and, you know, relayers and combine forces to fork away from 0x or something like that?
I don't know. Too early to tell. Mm-hmm. You know, I think something that I find challenging about this space in general is the fire hose of information, new technologies. I certainly can't keep up, right? Right now, we're focused on this interoperability problem, and we don't have to focus on this execution settlement problem that 0x is sort of taking care of us, which is great. You know, as we evolve and see what happens and what our customers need, you know, maybe, you know, I always want to be, I think there's a tension in the space of, you know, these kind of, at the end of the day, I want to build a great business for our customers, right? I'm going to leverage whatever technology I need to, and I'm going to do what I think is right for our customers. If that means working well with others in the space, great. I want to do that because I want to do that stuff as quickly as possible. If people have another vision that's not compatible with that, then I'm not going to be holden to that. And that's not to say that's an issue with us with 0x right now. I love that team. I think they're doing great work. But I do view these blockchains, cryptocurrencies, this ecosystem as tools, not dogmatic, not, you know, something I find really interesting about the Bitcoin space. Just as an example, is the way people talk about in religious tones. You know, like there's a certain amount of, you know, you choose your tribe, and there's the, you know, the Catholics versus the Lutherans, and, you know, there's Martin Luther and, you know, breaking off and theses and all that type of stuff. But I don't care about any of that stuff personally.
Yeah,
I care about we're choosing this problem to solve that we think is important, not just for adoption of this space, but making financial flow important, you know, more easy, better for the average person. 0x is a tool. We want to continue to develop that tool, and we'll evaluate that tool amongst other tools as they come online.
Do you think, I mean, you know, obviously that's, it's easiest to spot that with the Bitcoin community. And I think when you see the Ethereum community kind of juxtaposed to projects like EOS, arguably there's a similar kind of
correct
nature of the debate. Do you think that that obviously, if you go too far along the arguably you could characterize it as the customer first strategy,
yeah,
you might end up undoing some of the fundamental benefits of the technology. How do you kind of balance that? And do you think that that could be an ultimate sort of threat to something like Ethereum, is if they can't properly serve mm-hmm. what people actually want?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I did Tuesday night, Venrock was kind enough to host an influencer series that I was invited to speak at and pontificate and give my two cents. And you know, and you were supposed to take a contentious point, you know, and I love controversy. So I took the position, and maybe I agree with this, maybe I don't, that there's actually relatively few use cases that make sense for the pure blockchain technology in its quote unquote purest form, right? And that financial services, I think it's pretty clear to most people, makes sense there. Other things, I don't know. People don't know, but I think you're highlighting this point of, as people are starting to build more and more applications outside of financial services and some other specific use cases, you start to get to this push now to go back to, like, you know, EOS can argue is a pretty centralized model. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, but it depends on the use case. Mm-hmm. I think there is a bit of truth always to this claim of blockchain as a solution looking for a problem. I think financial services is pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Others still yet to be determined. I'm excited for the potential for some of these projects, but I'm also a little tempered by that daily active user number. Let's see what we can collectively do to make sure we find the right, and I think this goes back to that, what's the right tool for the job? Like, there was an event, I always like to share little anecdotes. There was an event in New York a few months ago I went to, and like somebody in the middle of this event stood up and said, hey, we're here to put higher ed on the blockchain, or like, you know, got, you know, fish food on the blockchain, or whatever it is. I mean, cool, go. If you're passionate about it, go for it. But to your point, like, I think we need to start first. What is the problem? Let's think of blockchain as a tool and a set of tools to solve problems. And I think look at that lens, not just try to put everything on a chain.
Yeah.
Great. Final kind of question I had is, I noticed on you're very active with your blog, right?
Yeah, it's all Monica. It's not me at all.
Yeah, and I think that's fantastic. Just wanted to promote that for a second. It's an excellent blog. I also saw that you have an API, which I think a couple other relayers do, but not across the board, that they all have an API. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact are you trying to create with that API?
I think it goes back to adoption, mm-hmm. right? So if you want to build a great business, have maximum flow through your pipes, I got to build easy ways for people to connect to it that's scalable and leverageable, mm-hmm. right? And so something we did, you know, our CTO Ari and our team in Poland have put a tremendous amount of work into this. Let's build that API look, feel, taste, just like any exchange, if not better, on planet Earth, right? So as an example, we're the only DEX, not just 0x relayer, but DEX period, that's in the CCXT algorithmic trading library that's very popular.
Mm.
Run by a fantastic team out in Russia and in Hawaii. Why is that? It's because we built that API to be interoperable with kind of any trading system or any you know, sense or tool you could use to move blockchain-based assets. And if you look at that site, I think it's ccxt.trade. The stamping of approval that the most performant APIs are Binance, Bittrex, Bitfinex, I believe Kraken, the fifth is the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. That's something we take a lot of pride in, and I think it goes back to, I'm not trying to reinvent the financial system in some sense yet. I want to move the ball forward one step. And then I think that's why you need to build the right tools, API framework, look, feel, taste, like any other trading system on planet Earth. Then we innovate on top of it and move and move and move. And so I think that's something we take a lot of pride in, and I view it through that lens of adoption.
Absolutely. I think it's so important to have that proper piping and those libraries that you mentioned just to get the traditional quants.
I was a quant trader. I still am for, you know, a long time, and built my own libraries. I want to cut paste strategies. I don't want to reinvent the wheel every time I want to do something. Yeah. Or if I want to, you know, some of the initiatives we're talking about with some of our partners on just using our infrastructure to not trade necessarily, but move financial flow in big chunks through our pipes. Like, all this interconnectivity is really important. And yeah, to your point, it's not something I think a lot of DEXs have done a particularly good job with.
Mm. I did have a question on stablecoins. Mm. We've got a whole bunch of fiat-backed stablecoins now. Mm-hmm. That market looks like it'll probably get more fragmented before it gets consolidated over time.
Yep.
You know, probably there will be a few big winners. And you've also got a whole bunch of decentralized stablecoins, all with different mechanisms, some broken, some not. Mm. How do you think about managing trading pairs with all these different stablecoins? Do you think that you have to make a value judgment on the, you know, the company providing the stablecoin, or if it's a decentralized one, the stability mechanism?
Yeah.
You know, there could be one that becomes really popular that arguably can break catastrophically.
Yeah.
What do you think about all of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I start through the lens of, maybe you can argue it's a little bit of a punt, but let's let the market decide a little bit, right? Like, I'm kind of the view, you know, why are a lot of these projects being issued? One part is, you know, a rethinking of how money works, right? And that's some of the algorithmic tokens are trying to do that to an extent. Others look at it as, I need a better on-ramp to my system, whether that's Circle, Gemini, whomever. So I'm going to issue my specific on-ramp for me. And there's value to potentially having all of them right now, if you're trying to, like, for me as an algorithmic trader, right? Like, maybe I want to have access, you know, through the ocean to all of these different things, because I can go there, I can move from risky to riskless possessions, I can go out to any of these other venues much faster, you know? So there's a use case there right now. I mean, I do think eventually there needs to be consolidation, and I do get a little concerned a little bit in the adoption of this space by traditional players or people outside the market today. Because imagine, and I just use the example that I know, right? Like, imagine I'm Goldman Sachs, I'm trying to sell to a customer of, we want to execute for you on behalf of these tokens, and you can have your US dollar in one of 17 flavors. And they would look at you like you have horns growing out of your head because it's just a dollar, right? And, well, you know, like, how are you going to explain that to people? Right. So I think I get why there's a proliferation of these projects. I get why certain people have favor one model over other. We'll see where it shakes out. But I do get a little concerned if we as a industry can't agree on a single dollar standard. Again, why are people super surprised the space hasn't been adopted by more people?
Mm.
Right. So that's a little bit of my perspective on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us, John. Where can people get in touch with you or learn more about your work?
So, you know, we've been live trading for a month, probably maybe close to 6 weeks now. You can go to theocean.trade and you can log in for an account and trade on our platform. We have, I think, 13 pairs available for trading. We're going to do a lot in the stablecoin space, a lot of unique and exclusive listings, a number of high-profile regulatory and partner announcements in the coming weeks and months. The thing I like to think that separates us from other, not just DEXs, projects in this space, is we want to be, you know, a trusted company, both in the way we do business, the way our architecture and technology works, to give you what you want. If that's a retail trader, I want to give you liquidity on the products you want in a way, plug in your preferred wallet and custody solution. If that's an institution, I want to do the same thing, you know, and we'll do whatever we need to do that. So theocean.trade, visit our blog on Medium. You can access it from that website. That's Monica's handiwork. You know, she cleans up my mess certainly on that front. And we get a lot of compliments. A big shout out to her. She's fantastic, and she's really the face of the company. So a lot of kudos to her. And we think that stuff's important, right? I think we've talked a lot about in this segment adoption,
yeah,
right, and education. And I think we feel that very strongly. And it's part of the reason we do the regulatory stuff, be a trusted partner that goes to all that stuff. That's very much our ethos.
Yeah. And for any of you trading nerds that are listening, there's a fantastic arbitrage bot
that's
listed on your blog.
Right.
That is reading through it.
And we have an intern, Shalesh, who's written a lot of that stuff, and we'll continue to pump out more of that. We're trying to have fun with it too, a little bit, right?
Like, yeah, it's very cool.
I like the ocean, just, playing with fish and presentation stuff and stuff like that. Like, putting out those series, I think all this stuff is important. Like, I do like the push of crypto and blockchain. Let people own their financial future more.
Yeah,
let's let
absolutely
Goldman Sachs take a little bit less taste of moving everybody's money. Nobody knows that better than me. So
cool.
That's the push.
Well, thanks again, John. Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about the ocean, check out the show notes included in your podcast. And remember to subscribe to get the latest episodes. If you have any questions or comments, reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the Wire blog, whatever works for you. If you like this episode, share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks again for listening. Nice.
Cool.
You're natural.